Hi, I'm Kat.
And I'm Emma.
If you love the Dead Parent Club podcast, you can help support its future using the Acast supporter feature.
Now, it's up to you how much you give, and there is no regular commitment. So if you can and you want to, please do hit the link in the show description to support now. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Dead Parent Club podcast.
With me, Emma Jones, and Kat Hooker. Now, today we're joined by someone who I stumbled across on TikTok and spent the rest of the hour literally crying with laughter at the videos about her late mum. Now, she's got a wonderful way of bringing honesty and humour into the painful world of grief. So it's our huge pleasure to welcome to the podcast TikTok comedian and dark humour connoisseur, Chloe Kent.
I don't know if I'm supposed to clap myself then, but...
Absolutely. Are you happy with that intro? TikTok comedian and dark humour connoisseur, yeah? I think that sums it up quite well, doesn't it?
I want it on my gravestone.
I was going to say, I'll make sure that happens, but who knows? One of us is going to die first, aren't we? Chloe, just for anybody listening who maybe doesn't follow you on TikTok and hasn't seen some of your incredible videos, tell us a little bit about who you are and what it is that you do.
So when I started taking to TikTok, obviously in lockdown, like everybody else, and just started having, like, messing around with comedy videos. However, like, I really started to find my niche when I was, like, posting basically, like, real life skits about my mum and how, you know, she passed away and how I responded to that grief and how everyone responds to grief, really. And it just took off from there. And then I got so many messages from people saying that, like, the dark humour was actually really helping them laugh through, like, their grief. And then so after that, I was like, well, there's no stopping me now. Like, I'm just going to go full with this and keep posting.
Do you do this just on the side of just your everyday life?
Yeah. Like, you know, I was doing it when I was working at Tesco and receptionist, and then obviously, I've got two children. So, yeah, no, it's literally just like, it's for fun. And, you know, it's for my own mental health as well, because it helps me, like, laughing sometimes through, you know, the harder days.
Can you please take us back to your own grief story then and tell us about your mum? What was she called and your relationship and kind of how that affected you when she passed?
My mum's name was Carol, and she had quite a rocky life, like mental health terms, like she really struggled. But then she joined a place called a hub, a mental health hub, and she literally just, like, thrived there, and she became such a happy person. So literally it was kind of a shame, because she was actually, like, living her best life for the first time in probably all of her life. She was so happy. And then I took her on holiday to Scotland, like, over Christmas, and just to spend some time together, and it was beautiful. But she was so tired, and I remember one morning she actually fell asleep on the sofa downstairs, but she took her bra off and left it on the floor. And, like, the kids and my partner come down, and I was like, Mum, what are you doing with your bra on the floor? What was going on? And she was like, I'm so tired lately, I'm not thinking straight. And she did say to me that the doctors had found something with her kidneys, but she was not concerned at all. Like, I think she thought it was, like, an infection or something like that. And I was like, okay, well, keep me posted on that. And then literally just after the new year, I phoned her and I said, have you had an update yet? And she said, oh, yeah, they said it's kidney failure. But she was so, like, aloof, I guess, and just not really, like, I don't think she, like, grasped, like, that sounded quite serious. And I was like, okay, well, I had a quick Google because I had no clue. And I saw that there were stages 1 to 5, you know, 5 being the worst. And I said to her, well, did they say what stage you're at? She went, yeah, five. And I was like, Mum, should we not be more worried about this? And I was like, did you not ask any questions? She was like, no, not yet. They've given me a leaflet. And I was like, oh my God, not the leaflet.
Oh my God.
So I started Googling stage five, kidney failure. And straight away, I was just like, no, this does not sound like it's going to be good. And I had to go back to her and be like, Mum, make sure go back to the doctors and keep asking questions. And she's like, oh, I don't really want it to scare me. And I was like, but I think you need to know. And yeah, it started there, really.
How old were you at this point, Chloe? When was this? And how old was your mum?
So my mum was 56 when she got the diagnosis. And so I must have been about 27.
So young, so young. How did it feel in that moment when, you know, because a lot of people, when they're delivering that news to loved ones, would be heartbroken. But how did you feel when your mum almost seemed so blasé about it?
Do you know, it was surreal. And I know this sounds odd, but it was almost frustrating because when you Google stage five kidney failure, you don't get any definitive answer. You know, like, you know how, like, when people might have a cancer, and then you always hear like they're put into like a group of, you know, like how long they might be here for and things like that. I couldn't find anything at all on the internet to suggest what stage five meant. You know, I didn't know if it meant she's got 5 years, 10 years. And I actually remember at one point I went to a an appointment with her, and I actually asked two separate doctors, and one said, given the fact that your mum's got other things wrong with her, like she had COPD, diabetes and things, you know, the doctor said, I think she's got a few years. And then I asked another doctor and he said, oh no, you know, people can go on dialysis and she could be here for 10, 15 years. So it was frustrating because I couldn't quite understand what was happening.
Mm-hmm. It's like a terminal diagnosis, but a case of at what end? I feel like that kind of has, it's kind of a double-edged sword, because in one way, I think it's good to not live with a time scale. So I think sometimes being given that gives people, like, so I think some people give up. They think, oh, I've only got this much time left, and they admit, they kind of succumb to that, and then that is what happens. Whereas I think when people don't know, sometimes I think there's this thing inside you that makes you live for longer than what you thought. I don't know how I feel about diagnoses with regards to timestamps. There's pros and cons to both.
Mm-hmm.
But how was life after that then? Like, did you ever get a sort of definitive answer? Did your mum go downhill quite quickly? Or
yeah, no, we definitely didn't get an answer. And I think, you know, it's because it does affect everybody so differently. You know, it really depends on your health in general. You know, like, if you have got stage five kidney failure but you're otherwise healthy, then yeah, you could probably have 10, 15, 20 years or more on dialysis and be fine. From mum's point of view, though, it was probably best that there was no timestamps, you know, like, it kept her quite, like, she fought hard, you know, and it wasn't an easy thing to watch.
Mm. What happened after that, Chloe? How long after that initial prognosis did your mum live? And what was that time like for you all as a family, day to day and in terms of long-term planning? And you with your own children as well, were they born then? What was the situation with you with your own family?
Yeah, so I had both my kids. So at the time of diagnosis, I think my youngest was 2 and my eldest would have been about 6. It was December 2016 and she died in February 2019. So really, things only started happening in 2017, you know, because she was kind of okay. And then we got to the spring of 2017 and actually they quite quickly said, oh, now you need dialysis. So she was gearing up for dialysis, but I mean, that really took it out of her. And then that's when the sudden decline came, like in between that time of spring 2017 and February 2019, she was actually so ill, like she'd had a cardiac arrest, she was in intensive care. It was really rocky, really up and down. And then there were times when she'd be like, Chloe, let's go to Primark, you know, like she felt good. So there was like no consistency. And then, yeah, it was really out of the blue in 2019. She was in hospital at the time, but she was about to be discharged. I saw her on the Sunday and she was about to be discharged on the Monday. So the last thing I said to her was, right, I'll pick you up Monday. I'll see you then. And yeah, and then obviously it didn't happen.
Wow. Are you an only child, Chloe?
No, I've got my older sister. But at the time, her and my mum, they just weren't that close. Mm. So she wasn't around as much. I mean, she was right in the last, you know, period, which is good. But yeah, no, I mean, she was great afterwards. But at the time, it was just, it felt like it was me and mum a lot.
But you had to bear a lot of that responsibility.
Yeah, and also she's, you know, she's single. You know, my dad, he's moved on, married with somebody else. So it did feel a little bit like, you know, I couldn't go home and relax because I knew that she was at home on her own or in hospital on her own. There was no one taking care of her. It was a lot sometimes, yeah.
And what was your mum's attitude like throughout it all? What was she like throughout the journey with her illness?
It was up and down. I think for the most part, she made a lot of jokes. She's very dark humoured as well, very, you know, dry humour. But then there were moments where it got to her. And I remember one time she just started crying because she'd been talking to the surgeon about the options of a transplant and it wasn't looking good. And the surgeon said, you know, what is it you're hoping? And she said, I just want enough time to see my grandchildren grow up a little bit, you know. Mm. And she really cried when she said that. And that really hurt me to see. Other than that, she was mostly quite okay and upbeat. And she made so many jokes still. She was so funny, especially in hospital. Like, there was this poor bloke who was like, I guess like a ward hostess. I'm not really sure what they're called. But he would like, you know, help with the foods and like bring the drink trays and everything else. And she would constantly flirt with him to the point where I was so convinced I was going to get called into the office to say, like, literally, your mum needs to calm down. But he was hilarious. But it did take a toll at times. You know, she had moments of having like panic attacks and things like that. But I would honestly say for the most part, she took it in her stride, actually. I'm really proud of her for how well she coped.
And what was it like for you getting that phone call? I'm assuming the hospital rang you to say your mum is either going to pass, so you need to get here, or she has passed.
Well, the phone call came on a withheld number and it was about 2 o'clock in the morning. And I just assumed it was like my cousin or something that, you know, drunk, they've been on the night out and now they're going to phone me up and be like, I love you, you know, and all that sort of thing. So I didn't answer the first call. And then it was my partner that said, oh, no, answer it just in case. So I hate answering withheld numbers. Doesn't everyone know?
Yeah.
You just never know. I can imagine it would be like PPI at 2 a.m.
Yeah.
So I answered it. And, you know, this guy said, hi, Chloe, you know, I'm working in the unit where your mum is. Could you come down? There's been a significant change. That's all he said. And I thought straight, I said, yeah, of course. I hung up the phone and I thought in my head, oh, has she had another cardiac arrest or something that's landed her back into intensive care? Mm. So I started getting dressed and because it's obviously 2 o'clock in the morning, my children were asleep and I didn't drive at the time. I passed my test 2 months later, but I didn't drive at the time. And my husband said, oh, do you want to get the kids up and I'll drive you down to the hospital? And I said, oh, no, I don't want to do that in case, you know, I get there and she's stable. You know, I don't want to get them out of bed at this time. I'll get a taxi. And then he was like, oh, I don't know. It doesn't sit right with me. He was like, can you just call them back and just check sort of what the situation is? Because if it is serious, I'll get them up. So I phone back and I remember I stood by the window and I was so like nonchalant sort of attitude, like so calm, thinking they'll be like, oh yeah, no, she was a bit unwell, so we've moved her to intensive care. That's fully what I was expecting. And I said to him, oh, could you just update me, you know, what the actual change was and if she's stable now, please? And he literally went, oh no, sorry, no, she's gone. And that's literally how he said it. Like, he panicked, bless him. And then I was just like,
oh wow.
All just come out, you know, you just sort of lose it. And I was like proper screaming by the window. And then obviously my partner knew straight away what that meant.
Wow. So had she died when they called you the first time?
Yeah, she'd already passed away. I don't know whether the hospitals are supposed to do it over the phone. I think maybe that's why he wanted me to go in. I don't know. But you know, like, It's no shade to the hospital because things happen, but she was actually already gone about 2.5 hours by the time they called me because they'd lost my phone number. So so I was kind of gutted because I just wanted like a moment with her where I felt like she had only just gone rather than, you know, she was just cold. I don't know.
Or even a moment when she, you know, a final moment, you'd hope, you know, if they could see that, right, this woman is leaving us. That moment, really, everybody deserves to have their dying moments with the person that they love.
Yeah, definitely. I would have, you know, I would have loved just the last moment. But yeah, it felt a little bit, I don't really know how to word it, but being 2.5 hours late, I felt really disconnected quite quick, you know?
Yeah, I get that.
What did you do after that? So you were given this devastating news over the phone, heartbreaking then that you've not got the closure of saying goodbye. So what do you do in the immediate moments after that and the following day?
Well, The immediate thing I did was phone my sister, but I hadn't actually spoken to my sister for about 6 months because we'd fallen out as well, like because of mum. It was like this huge three-way argument we had, and then I hadn't spoken to her, and I was like, oh my God, I've got to ring my sister. So I didn't actually have my sister's number. That's how much we were bickering. Wow. Don't you just love siblings? Of course now, but at the time. So I actually had to phone my brother-in-law. And he answered the phone, and obviously he's thinking, why on earth is Chloe ringing? Like, is she going to yell at me? And I was like, is Keely there? And he was like, what? What's going on? Because obviously by this point, it's like 20 to 3 in the morning. And I was like, put Keely on. And he kept saying, why? And I just kept saying, put Keely on. Because in my head, I thought, I cannot repeat this twice. I only want to say it to my sister, you know. I don't want to say it to Charlie, bless his heart. And he was like, yeah, okay. So he sort of put Keely on, but I knew when the way she said hello, she had so much dread in her voice that I knew that she knew what I was about to say. So I just said, she's gone. That's all I said. And she must have dropped the phone because I heard her screaming, but from like the other side of the room. It was a real wail that I just lives with me. Like I hear her react like that more than I hear the person telling me mum's passed away.
There is something in that. It's a proper raw emotion, isn't it? I think whenever I think back to the moment that my mum died, I think about the kind of wail that I did. Like you can't contain it. Like it really does just fall out of you. It's like a primal instinct.
Yeah, it's just that huge shock, isn't it, all coming out.
And that whole, and I remember on both when my mum died and my nana died, I collapsed into my knees. It's like I lost any sensation in being able to hold my body up. Mm. And I think there is something in that it is almost a biological, almost animal thing that you have nothing in you. It's just this wail comes out and you drop.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
The following day, Chloe, because obviously you're a mum, so your world couldn't just stop. You had to carry on, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
How did it unfold both in the immediate aftermath and the weeks and months after it?
Well, it all happened that night. You know, obviously I did get my kids up. I took them to my partner's mum's. I met my sister at the hospital. And, you know, I couldn't switch off, to be honest. From that moment, I found it so difficult to switch off. I mean, we got to the hospital at like 4:30 in the morning, and I went in and I saw Mum with my sister. I guess obviously to confirm it's her and say goodbyes and that. That was quite traumatic actually, because when we got there, all her clothes and belongings were already packed up in a pile and left outside the door. And I think because it had been so much, well, a few hours, I don't know, but it was really uncomfortable. It was like, oh, is this it? Are we checking out? You know, it was just like quick.
Oh my God.
But yeah, I mean, I couldn't switch off. I said sort of my goodbyes as best I could. And then I was like, should we go to McDonald's? So we went.
That is literally one of those McDonald's adverts. You know, when they have all like the heartwarming stuff.
Literally.
Like, it's like, it's not just a Mackey's. It's like a father and son sharing chips in the restaurant. Like, well, your parent just died. So go and bond and think about that over a Mackey's.
This is it. Mum's gone. It's time for McFlurry, you know. So, We went to McDonald's and then I went straight to my mum's house and I just sat there with my sister until about maybe 7 in the morning, and we just looked through photos and we just started discussing things. But honestly, I literally was like a robot. I survived from very little sleep, and it was just like everything had to be done now. I had to do the funeral. I had to pack up her clothes. I had to ring around to tell everybody. Obviously, I spoke to the children, but it was just all very like, I couldn't stop, because when I stopped, I hated it. I found it very, all I could do then was think and grieve, and I didn't want to do that yet.
Do you think you've kind of carried that on since then? Because that's one of the things that I've found, like I've developed this habit of keeping myself very busy all the time, because I find slowing down quite tough.
Do you know, in a way, because I used to get really busy. I used to go and see my mum's grave, like, you know, 4 or 5 times a week. I would drive across there and I'd think to myself, at some point, I need to stop doing this so much because I'm not sure if it's healthy. And then COVID happened and, you know, Boris said we couldn't leave our house anyway. So I think that made me stop. You know, COVID made me stop. There was nothing to do. So I kind of had to sit with my thoughts. And, you know, that's when I started to struggle actually quite mentally, because I just thought about it so much, and then I really realised how much I missed her.
I want to talk more, Chloe, about that, because obviously COVID was hugely difficult for a lot of people anyway, because by nature, no matter who you are, we are social beings to a certain degree at the very least. Just before we go into that though, because I know a lot of our listeners who might have lost parents might have children of their own. Do you mind me asking how you told your children?
We was in the car initially, taking them to, you know, in the middle of the night, taking them to my partner's mum's, so we could go to the hospital. And, you know, to be honest, I think my eldest one worked it out instantly. You know, she can hear us. She obviously saw how I react. At that point, I couldn't hide that, because it was just, you know, an explosion of emotions. So she kind of got that quite quick. And bless her heart, she didn't say anything to me when I dropped her off, you know, and I think because she thought, you know, mum's really upset. You know, I think she was about 8 at this time. But she did send me a text on her iPad, you know, when she got to grandma's. And it just said, I love you so much, mum. And I'm really sorry that you've lost Nana. And it was so sweet. And then my youngest, God, he was only like 3 at this point. So he just didn't really get it. All he kept saying is, so Nana's in heaven. And I was like, yeah. And he was like, with Elvis Presley. And I was like, probably. I was like, she's probably hunted him down, yes. My son, he started to collect white feathers that he found outside. And he was like, look, mum, these have come from Nana's wings. And he was like, so cute. And then he used to write letters. I've actually got a video of it. He used to write letters and then throw them out the bedroom window because he thought they'd go up to heaven. He was adorable. But do you know, they honestly both took it really, really well. I mean, it's only now where Teddy is, he's 7 now. It's only now, if you talk about Nana, he sort of understands a bit more, and he's still got some memories, and he will cry. Like, Teddy will bawl his eyes out if he sees anyone else upset. But yeah, my eldest is really good, actually. She's fine.
Kids are so resilient.
Literally, like, she surprised me. I mean, she's done brilliantly.
Did you find that you used humour as a kind of coping mechanism straight away, or is that something that developed more so in COVID when you kind of, when you obviously started on TikTok?
Do you know, I get this question a lot on TikTok from people. They say to me, oh, Chloe, my dad's just passed away and I'm not laughing like you. Mm-hmm. And I lie. I always say, oh, it will come. I didn't joke straight away. Don't be silly. I'm not mental. But in actual fact, I actually made my first joke when we got to the hospital with my sister. I made a few jokes straight away off the cuff, and it was because I felt so uncomfortable. Yeah. And I just, you know, my sister, who I hadn't obviously been talking to for a little while, she was bawling her eyes out. I didn't know how to comfort her because we were just like, so instead, I think I was comforting people and her with humour in a way. I think that's how I was doing it.
And when did you realise, because obviously lockdown happened and that was like the boom of TikTok. Everyone was stuck at home making these TikToks. What was, there's like two strands to this question. So what was lockdown like for you? Obviously you mentioned, you touched on briefly the fact that then you kind of had to sit with your grief. You couldn't visit your mum's grave. And when did you decide, right, I'm going to join TikTok? And how did that almost spiral and then help you, if it has?
Yeah, so when COVID happened, yes, it was hard, but also it kind of gave me a breather. There was suddenly no pressure to go out or do anything or mix with anybody. And I had just started some antidepressants. And anyone that's ever started antidepressants knows that like the first 6 weeks can be really hard. So I actually quite liked the fact that I wasn't mixing with anybody. And then the antidepressants, they kicked in and they actually really started to help me, because I was literally anxious from the moment I opened my eyes till when I went to bed, and I could not stop thinking about like my future and the kids, and feeling sorry for mum was the worst one. I felt so sorry for mum, even though she's gone and she can't feel that sort of pain. I felt so sorry for her that she wasn't here with the kids. But then the antidepressants kicked in and I started watching everybody on TikTok, and I just thought, actually, like this is a bit of me. Like, I love comedy, and I just felt like I'm going to use my energies that I have into this instead and see what happens. And it just, yeah, it was a real comfort to me, actually.
Do you get any backlash on TikTok?
Very rarely, actually, really rare. I do get a couple where people have said things like, I don't find this funny at all. And I just think, well, I don't care.
Not funny.
It's not your grief. It's not your pain. So I don't care. And I get a couple of people, because I started making a few videos where I was just exaggerating the whole kidney transplant situation. I was kind of joking that mum needed my kidney, but I wouldn't give it to her. That was more fictional, because that didn't quite happen. But that got a few people riled. They was like, oh my God, how could you not give your mum your kidney? And I would just joke and be like, look, I lent her my Vic or Disney box set once.
Yes.
She didn't look after that, so she's not having my kidney.
That, Chloe, that was the first video I saw of yours, and that was when I fell in love with your content. And that was the first video I told my brother to have a look at, and we were crying. And do you know what? The internet never ceases to amaze me, because how people haven't taken that tongue in cheek about you not giving your mum a kidney. Yeah. Is beyond me, but it is just brilliant. I mean, I love you've stuck like googly eyes on your mum's little ashes, haven't you? Yeah. And it's like, do you know what's so wonderful though, is that you've almost, like, we've never met your mum, a lot of us, you might have friends on there who did, but it's like through your TikToks you bring her to life. I feel almost like I can know your mum through your TikToks. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and my mum would love to be a part of this. This would be brilliant to her. So I never feel guilty. I never feel like I'm crossing the line, because I know mum's humour, and I know she'd think that I think she'd just love being present, you know, especially with the kids. I think that she would love it.
What do your friends and family say about it? Do they like it?
Well, as I say, we were kind of a small family on that side of the family, because, you know, mum was single and, you know, her parents have passed away, and so is her sister. But so really it's only my sister, but she loves it. Like she said it makes her smile, makes her laugh, and She, yeah, no, I think she used to rely on me a lot when Mum first died to keep her laughing, and it's just sort of continued. So, no, she loves it.
That relationship between you and your sister then, did that, did the death of your mum bring you both together and then make you sustain that relationship almost?
Yeah, so it didn't. So as soon as we got to the hospital and met, the first thing we said to each other was, right, let's all forget what's happened because, you know, we need each other right now. And, you know, I remember my sister, my brother-in-law, like 100%, you know, like they were really like, you know, they were really supportive as well. We really looked after each other. The funny thing is about grief is that there's kind of a range of emotions. And one of them that seemed to hit at the exact same time for me and my sister was anger. Mm-hmm. And when the anger emotion came, it was like suddenly we just couldn't be around each other because we just started blaming each other for things. We just was digging each other out. It was just, it got ridiculous. But it was because we were grieving. You know, it wasn't on purpose. We wasn't trying to upset each other. We were just stuck in that anger part of grief. So again, we stopped talking for a few months. And then when we calmed down and, you know, we had grieved a little bit more, that's when we reached out to each other and we was like, this is so silly. You know, we've lost our mum. I don't want to lose you too. I love you. Let's work on our relationship. And, you know, ever since then, touch wood, a couple of years now, we've been fine. We're really close and we spend a lot of time together.
Oh, I bet your mum would be so happy to know that.
Yeah, she would. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Bless her.
Chloe, when you're not laughing and joking on TikTok, when you are sat on your own these days, how do you find that you cope with grief? Does it ever really, really just strike you occasionally and you go, oh my God, my mum's dead?
Yeah, it does. And sometimes I have that night where I feel like I don't know how to word it. It's almost like I'm going to allow myself to cry. You know, so like the other night I watched Elvis, the film, for the first time. And Elvis Presley was like my mum's, like my her god, you know. So I've been avoiding it all this time, and then suddenly I thought, no, I'm gonna watch it, even though I knew it was gonna bring up my emotions. But I thought, no, I actually want to kind of feel that. I want to feel like it's okay to still cry. So, you know, sometimes I do have that moment where I might listen to a certain playlist or, you know, watch a film that reminds me of her. And yeah, I do sort of let the emotions come when I want to. Yeah.
Do you feel, Chloe, like you've changed as a person since the passing of your mum?
Yeah, definitely. I definitely understand how quickly life can change. And I definitely have this life's too short kind of idea stuck in my head, which is good and it's bad in the sense that, you know, like before, I'd be like, should we go to Florida? And my husband's like, yeah, let's save up and we're going 2024. And I'm like, no, let's go in October. Like, I've just got this like idea now where I just want to grab life, you know, and I don't want to let it pass me by.
Chloe, you are my kind of girl. If your husband won't go, you know where I am. I'll be right there with you.
100%.
You're absolutely right, though, because I think as well, when you lose a parent young, the anticipatory grief of your own death as well becomes even more prominent. Like, my mum died 16 years from my age now. And I say to everybody when I talk to them, when they say, oh, you know, what's the future look like for you? And I'm like, well, I've got to fit everything into 16 years just in case I die at the same age as my mum. So I need to move quick. And it's interesting, isn't it, how your perspective of life changes. And it almost feels like you're running on a treadmill whilst also trying to take everything in slow-mo so you can remember it all and appreciate it all.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Because my nan passed away at 48 and my mum was 57. So, like, in my head, I get so anxious about that age. And then, yeah, I'm the same. I just feel like I don't want to risk, you know, waiting too long for anything, you know, just in case. But hopefully I break the pattern and I'm, like, 99, but we'll see.
Yes. It says in your bio, you know, you're a future sitcom writer. You're clearly very talented, very witty, very entertaining. What does the future look like for you?
Do you know, there's a few things going on at the moment that's literally just happened in the last two or three days, which I would love to tell you about, but I will be so told off, so I can't.
That's so exciting.
It really is. But one thing is that, yeah, I have been writing a script called Raising Mum, which I've been writing for some years now. But when Mum passed away, I altered it quite a lot and I added a lot of the dark humour. And that script is like my baby, and hopefully one day we'll take it somewhere. But what I've been doing actually, although it's a script and it's not been seen, I have been taking little bits out of it and putting it into my TikToks. So then I get to see people's reactions and feedbacks. Then I'm like, yeah, no, that's funny. I'll keep that in. So I'm like, so I'm still benefiting off my mum's death here, aren't I, really? Because I'm still using that grief to like make something positive out of it, you know, so.
Well, you need to spin it some way. And I think being able to create something that other people can relate to, and again, breaks down those barriers towards grief. Like, people are so scared of talking about it, and if humor means that people can actually discuss it in some way, shape or form, then brilliant, because I think that is the most easily accessible way to opening the conversation around grief. So I think what you're doing is incredible.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing, because with grief, unfortunately, it will come to every single one of us, you know. Mm-hmm. We're all going to lose somebody down the line that we love. So that's why for me, like, to do a sitcom or to do TikToks, like, it's really important to me, because I know the audience it's reaching. I know how many people are affected or will be affected. And I want people to know that as much as the pain hurts, it's okay to laugh sometimes, you know. Like, if we didn't laugh, then we'd all be, you know, rocking back and forth 24/7.
I do both, to be fair. What advice would you give to the Chloe that heard her mum's diagnosis, or to another Chloe or somebody else, someone, a young person out there dealing with this kind of news right now, or the pending or immediate death of a parent?
I would say, look after your mental health, first of all. So try and sleep where you can. Don't be afraid to talk to the doctor about antidepressants or those, you know, tablets that help, like, the onset of a panic attack. You know, don't be afraid to, like, use your resources to help you mentally. But I would also say, like, don't put too much pressure on yourself. Like, everybody's grief journey is so different. So if you're not making jokes the next day, you're probably quite normal. Don't worry about it. Like, I'm worried about myself here. But, I'd also say, you know, if you're not crying straight away, that's also normal, you know, or if you can't stop crying. So I would say to people not to compare your journey to anybody else's. Don't try and rush it. It will be a very, it'll be a bumpy road, and you'll have good days and you'll have some bad days. But I would tell people to try and remember that it does get better. It doesn't heal. I don't think anything heals, but time does help. You're always going to miss that person, but the grief and the pain is never going to be as strong as it is in the first few days, you know.
Wonderful advice that, Chloe. And just finally, we always ask our guests to share their favorite memory of their parents. So share your mum's name and a favorite memory of her.
Do you know, the first one that comes to my head is poor old Carol. She was so clumsy. And I know this is not like a lovely, lovely, gorgeous memory of us hand in hand down the beach and
plaiting
my hair. But we was in this garden centre once, and it was raining hard, and my dad went out to get the car. You know what dads are like, they go and get the car, don't they? To bring it closer to
bring
the shop.
So,
yeah. I'll bring the car around. She was standing in like the by the exit, and she was like, for God's sake, where's your dad? She cupped her eyes with her hands to sort of look out the window, and she didn't realise that she was stood right next to the automatic doors. So somebody started walking towards the doors, and the door started opening, and it literally knocked her into a whole pile of like baskets and trolleys. She went flying, and she embarrasses so easy, but I was literally on the floor wetting myself. Like, it was so funny to me. And then she was like, for goodness sake, it's your father's fault. If he had just come round, this would have happened. And when she got in the car, she actually told my dad off. Like, it killed me. It just made me laugh so much. Bless her.
Chloe, Carol sounds like an absolute gem. And do you know what it sounds like? She lived a lot of life in her time on earth. And you are a credit to her. You can just see, you know, if you were brought up by her and look at how you turned out, it's incredible. And it's genuinely been a privilege to hear your story and hear you talk on the podcast. And I know you'll have helped so many people. And I have no doubt that whatever these exciting things are in the pipeline for you, they're going to continue helping other people. And your light will just continue to shine and get brighter and brighter. For anybody that loves you as much as we do, Chloe, tell them where they can find you.
TikTok, I'm mostly at, which is Chloe Kent 89 on TikTok. I'm almost at 300k followers now. I'm excited. Woo! So yeah, find me there and we'll have a giggle together.
You certainly will. Thank you, Chloe. Thank you so, so much. And hopefully our paths will cross again in the future.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Please share your news once you're allowed.
I will. I will.
Thanks, Chloe. Take care. Thank
you. Later.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.